This weekend starts right after this.
Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
Will classrooms become incubators? I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Coming up this hour, how will the novel coronavirus impact schools if and when students return to in-person instruction? We'll examine the different aspects. Also, there's been a spike in above-ground pool sales during a summer of lockdowns, providing relief for many families, but not everyone loves the idea. Also, on the investment front, when buying on the dip is not market timing, hear how to go against conventional wisdom. And with debate over a return to schools, a look at what the U.S. Naval Academy has put in place for plebes.
So it seems that all of these academies, including the Naval Academy, are operating in sort of a bubble system, kind of like with the NBA, but it's not as extensive. So all of the students are required to stay on the campus at the Naval Academy. All the freshmen are plebes, as they're called. They have to be there. They're quarantined for 2 weeks upon arrival. They're tested for coronavirus.
Mark Satter at CQ Roll Call on the so-called plebe summer looking a bit different this year. As many school districts across the U.S. prepare to reopen campuses, some fear classrooms will become the next incubators for large coronavirus outbreaks. Will they or not? Depends who and what few studies you believe. More from Jamie Fraser, national data reporter at USA Today. Jamie set this up.
Well, there's been a lot of discussion about whether schools are safe for kids to return to, whether schools are safe for teachers to return to, and all the precautions that are recommended for having safe in-person classes. But we wanted to look specifically at how schools could affect the overall numbers of cases in your community.
All right, so what could happen? What's that scenario?
So just like any other group setting, you have a large group of people meeting and spending long periods of time together, and then they go back to their families. And so there's potential that, whether it's a student or a staff member, that, schools could become incubators in a sense, which we see, in the flu season, we see with other viral respiratory diseases that, even though kids aren't going to necessarily have bad outcomes as often as adults, kids can still spread the virus to adults who might have worse outcomes. You can have, kids that spread it to adults in their family who go on to spread it elsewhere. So you can end up with a situation that we've not had for several months in this country where you have hundreds of people getting together on a daily basis and spending 6 hours together. And really, that's what the risk comes from.
Yeah. We're speaking with Jamie Fraser, national data reporter at USA Today. Her piece is called Kids Less Likely to Die from Coronavirus, But Schools Could Become Hotspots for Spread. All right, so you have many parents, President Trump, who want kids to have in-person instruction this fall. Teachers are pushing back, saying time out, like we just discussed. This could be dangerous for us. We could bring this back to our families, as could the kids. And then there's also this other wrinkle, too, which says, hey, what about childhood development here? These kids not being with their peers, loneliness and depression from being at home or, school just online being not a very good learning environment.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, the recommendation that came out of the National Academies of Science and also the American Academy of Pediatrics, both groups, recommended in-person classes with the big caveat, as soon as it's safe. And, what that means is schools need to have adequate protections in place for students and staff. There needs to be physical distancing, there needs to be mask wearing, there have to be other cleanliness protocols or health screenings. But the big one that a lot of states have not directly addressed in their plans so far, although some have, is the level of community spread. If you have a positivity rate in your community of 5% or more, that means that local health officials are not testing widely enough to contact trace and stop spread before it starts to escalate. And so if you open a school in a community with a high positivity rate, you're just multiplying the chances for spread to happen. But all these experts are saying if you're in a community that has a low positivity rate, a low, you know, precedent of COVID, it can be safe. And yes, we should reopen schools because of those other challenges. Kids need schools. Parents need schools so they can return to work. So it's more complicated than just the health outcomes, right?
So the issues that have occurred at some summer camps or other youth programs where there's been kind of these micro hotspots that have come up, is that an indication of what could happen in school?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's tough to know, how often there have been hotspots involving, or outbreaks involving kids in school-like settings, because most states do not publicly report that data. What we see are some cases that have generally been reported by local media, often after a parent or, someone else involved in the outbreak made it public. But for instance, in Georgia, there was a summer camp, and they were able to test 344 of the camp attendees. Most of them were kids or teenagers who were staff members, and 76% of them tested positive.
Thanks, Jamie. Jamie Frazier, national data reporter at USA Today. 13 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. The T-shirt is a menswear staple. Unfortunately, the basic tee we love has its issues, right? Shrinkage, bacon neck, fading, and stretching, to name a few. But the modern take on the classic T-shirt from Cuts Clothing has completely changed the game. With their amazingly soft, custom-engineered Pika Pro fabric, Cuts T-shirts have an athletic, tailored-looking fit that's comfortable anywhere, from a day in the office to a night on the town, and everything in between. I have to say, I love my Cuts T-shirts. I've worn them casually with shorts and sandals, but also under my suit jacket in more professional settings. They're one of the most comfortable, durable, and fashionably flexible shirts I've ever owned. Plus, they're pre-shrunk, wrinkle-free, and hold their shape over time, no matter what style you prefer. That's why Cuts is the only shirt worth wearing. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. Again, cutsclothing.com/Gordon. Glad you could spend part of your weekend with us. This portion of the program is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. A new survey finds 1 in 5 Americans now expect to retire later than planned because of the economic fallout of the pandemic. Plus, 14% say they've given up all hope of reaching their savings goal. For perspective and guidance on how to pandemic-proof your retirement, we're joined now by Dina Brown, wealth advisor at Lakeview Capital Partners in Jacksonville, Florida. Dina, what's your advice to clients?
There are some really scary times right now, and so some people may have been planning to retire at this time, and so you want to really go back and reevaluate your retirement plan. This is not something you just want to wing and say, oh, I'm just going to retire, because it could have some effects, long-term effects, if you do retire at the wrong time. So, just go back and make sure you're being proactive about your retirement and not reactive.
You made me think of something there, and that is, are folks coming to you these days in 2020 or, in the middle of a pandemic and talking about full on retirement, like taking the shingle down, closing up the laptop, or are some folks like still doing stuff, still working and collecting some sort of paycheck?
Hey, it's mixed. So if you've got someone who's totally miserable in their job, they want to retire. Yeah. They wanted to retire yesterday, but you have other people that, kind of like their job, but they want to do not now because you can't travel that much, but they want to do other things like maybe spend more time with their family or fish or, with some new hobbies. They're saying, hey, maybe I'll just supplement my income and work part-time, maybe in the same field that they were in, or maybe something totally totally different, because this is a time when you're retiring, you can actually and try something new and work part-time and enjoy retirement at the same time and have a little bit of that extra income.
Is there pandemic panic, for lack of a better phrase, among those who are right at the retirement point?
No, Gordon, I haven't seen any panic, and that could be because they're working with a professional, but I can assume that the people who are not working with a professional are probably a little bit scared, and that's very normal. And that's why, again, it is so important, if you are getting close to retirement, that you should, I shouldn't say should, but it's a great idea to work with a professional to help you through that. Because, again, this is not something you want to just, take on yourself and just kind of figure it out on your own. You really want somebody to help guide you for the long term.
We're speaking with Dina Brown, wealth advisor and certified financial planner with Lakeview Capital Partners in Jacksonville, Florida. We're talking about how to pandemic-proof your retirement. So the stock market has come almost all the way back from those lows it hit when the outbreak began. Are some folks saying, okay, that's enough, I'm going to take the money and run, stock it in some safety, and are they saying that, and is that your advice?
No. Actually, people are doing the opposite. They're saying, I think that when the market goes up, it makes people feel really, really good. And this is a psychological thing. And they're like, oh, it's going up, so I want to buy more. And then when the market goes down, it makes them think, oh, no, I'm scared and I want to sell. And sometimes you don't want to go with your emotion because you might be making the wrong move. So usually you want to start buying when things are low and selling when things are high. And the way you can do that is actually setting up an asset allocation, which is just, a mix of stocks and bonds, including mutual funds or exchange-traded funds, and then setting targets. And when the market moves up, you just trim the things that have gone up and buy the things that have gone down, and vice versa, so that you're always kind of doing that systematically where you're buying low and selling high.
I don't know how to take the emotions out of it. I think I'm good at times, and other times I'm thinking, oh, this is terrible. How do you do that? I mean, obviously working with a professional can help.
You're not alone. Yeah, it's very, very difficult to manage your own money because, again, those emotions get in the way. So you need somebody who's not emotional to tell you and to talk you off the ledge. And there have been many times that I've had to talk people off the ledge. They panic. They say, I can't do this anymore. And what I say is, you know what, get up, go over to your TV, turn it off, and then go do something fun and let me handle this as your professional. And a lot of times that helps a lot.
You know, I don't hear from you at times saying that there's a but in all this. You, I think, consistently say you need a balanced portfolio, whether it's stocks, bonds, or real estate, or some overseas stuff, big cap, small cap. But you never say, however. And I always think, well, what if you're retiring tomorrow? What if you just started retiring in March?
Well, listen, I've been doing this for a very long time. I know I look super young, but I've been doing this for 20 years. So, you know what? There are so many things out there that you could do, take advantage of, or strategies. If you don't do this for a living, you may not think of these kind of things. But, I'm on top of it all the time. And sometimes you got to be a little creative, and sometimes you have to do something that you normally wouldn't do. And just know, okay, this is part of your plan, and this is what we're going to do, and this is going to be the outcome.
Thanks, Dina. Dina Brown, wealth advisor at Lakeview Capital Partners, based in Jacksonville, Florida. 22 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend.
Dell supports America's entrepreneurs during Small Business Month with all you need to office anywhere. Save up to 45% on computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Upgrade to new modern devices with Windows 10. Plus, save on top-brand tech while enjoying free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the tech that's just right. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/smallbusinessdeals.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here, Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Thanks for joining us. Are you one of those people who likes to give advice? If your suggestions are often met with resistance, maybe you need to change your technique. Wall Street Journal relationship columnist Elizabeth Bernstein has some, well, advice. Elizabeth, explain the reader question that you received.
Okay, so I got a letter from a father with saying, help me. I like to give advice. I give my adult son advice. Recently, you know, he had me over. We were grilling together, and all I did was say, son, let me show you how I do that. The father was horrified that the son was throwing the steaks on the grill without already heating up the grill. So he said, son, let me tell you how I'm going to do that. The son stomped off and said, dad, grill the steaks yourself. So the father writes me and says, hey, how do I give advice? My son, I give it a lot. He's always annoyed by my advice. What am I doing wrong?
All right. So what happened here, I guess? Is there something else going on that the son would storm off and just saying, hey, dad, I got this, instead of just storming off?
Yeah, I think that there's probably a lot going on. And my guess is, you know, if somebody's writing me at the Wall Street Journal asking for advice, this is a problem that comes up all the time. My guess is this is a father who probably gives a lot of advice, and maybe his technique needs to be adjusted, which is what I suggested. You know, so you can give advice. I'm going to believe that the father wants to give advice because he wants to be helpful and he wants to bond with his son, and he believes he has like hard-earned advice, probably across the whole spectrum of things that a father could tell a son, and he wants to share that knowledge. But something about how he's doing it is coming across as very critical to this, you know, son, the you know, younger adult, and probably has been that way for a long time, maybe even since he was a child. So how does a father cut through this and have this lovely bond he wants? How can he give advice in a better way?
We're speaking with Elizabeth Bernstein, relationship columnist at the Wall Street Journal. All right, so the advice for those who like to give advice would be what?
So I suggested the three A's: assess, ask, and adjust. So assess. I suggested that the father first, you know, do a little research, ask, you know, his wife or partner, maybe another child who's not always annoyed with him, maybe his best friend, but ask around, hey, you know, do I give a lot of advice? Do I give too much advice? Does it come across as harsh or critical, or, you know, do I come across as a know-it-all? What's going on? And get some feedback from the people around him about what he could be doing wrong. So that's number one. Then ask the son, hey, what's up? Like, I just, you know, it's just a steak. I was just, you know, trying to help. Like, you know, what's going on? But this is the key here, is you want to ask the son, you know, what he's hearing. Like, son, what's upsetting you? Because I genuinely care. This is not about trying to defend yourself. This is about trying to figure out what is it that's really triggering the son. And now you're going to be able to have more information so that you can go ahead and adjust your behavior. So the father wants to give advice. And you know what? We could all use some advice from our folks. So I don't want to say don't give advice. I want to figure out how to do it so that the father's heard. So he's assessed. He's gone ahead and done a little research, asked others, asked the son what he's doing wrong, and now he can adjust. And this is what's really interesting. I read a really interesting piece of research, a study recently, that showed that when people give feedback, if they focus on a future goal, how they would like things to go in the future, as opposed to criticizing what happened in the past, things go better. The person receiving the feedback hears it and wants to adjust better, accepts it better. So you want any feedback you give to be future goal-oriented.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Bernstein, Wall Street Journal relationship columnist, 30 minutes after the hour on This Weekend. Let me tell you about my new favorite way to pass the time while commuting. It's the app called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and whittles it down to just 15 minutes. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading self-improvement books. I just finished listening to Snowball, a Warren Buffett biography. Listen to Blinkist while commuting or maybe exercising, even while you're waiting for your kids to finish practice. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read. I also like listening to some of the history titles since I never had much good history in school. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer. just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning. Thanks for being with us. Glad you could spend part of your weekend here. Coming up this half hour, on the investment front, when buying on the dip is not trying to time the market. Also, the people not celebrating your new above-ground pool this summer, and the man learning of the global pandemic after 9 months alone at sea. That story in about 20 minutes. As the national debate rages over how to safely reopen schools this fall amid the coronavirus pandemic, one institution has forged ahead before most others, and that's the United States Naval Academy. Each year, the Naval Academy takes in roughly 1,200 students for a 7-week physical and mental training regimen known as Plebe Summer. The goal is to turn civilians into midshipmen. Mark Satter, defense reporter at CQ Roll Call, says this summer that process looks a little different and has involved a lot of hand sanitizer. Mark, what are you hearing?
So it seems that all of these academies, including the Naval Academy, are operating in sort of a bubble system, kind of like with the NBA, but it's not as extensive. So all of the students are required to stay on the campus at the Naval Academy. All the freshmen, or plebes as they're called, they have to be there. They're quarantined for 2 weeks upon arrival. They're tested for coronavirus. And that's where they're going to stay. And they kind of live and train in these 40 to 50 person family units. And the idea is that if everybody in that family unit has been tested and is okay, then that should be relatively safe. That, of course, you know, has some exceptions.
Right. All right. So the units don't mix as they might have in the past, correct?
That's right.
All right. So it's at the military academies, I guess it might be somewhat easier to enforce these rules because, as you said, the students, the plebes, the cadets, they cannot leave, unlike a student at, you know, Old State U.
Right. That's exactly right. And, you know, they have these campuses that are enclosed and, you know, theoretically there's some sort of security. The caveat, though, is that at least at the Naval Academy, the staff can leave. And that, of course, presents to me some problems. You know, if the staff can leave and kind of go and interact in Annapolis, Maryland, where the Naval Academy is located, where cases are still relatively high, you know, it's possible that they could bring the virus back onto the campus.
Yeah. So what's the daily routine going to be like for these plebes in terms of training and then and testing for coronavirus also?
Well, I'm not sure that they're going to be tested much after the initial 2-week quarantine. I mean, they'll train in their kind of family units. And as you said, they won't mix with the other units, which they've done in the past for kind of intramural sports and stuff like that. But other than that, you know, they wear face masks and they kind of do their training. And I don't know. I mean, they're all housed in the same complex, but they say that if anybody has any symptoms or has like a raised temperature or anything of the sort, then they'll be isolated. But it's unclear to us what kind of testing they're doing on a daily basis, if at all.
We're speaking with Mark Satter, defense reporter at CQ Roll Call. His piece is called Naval Academy's Plebe Summer Looks a Bit Different This Year. The Naval Academy is kind of unique, I think, in that all of the midshipmen are in a single building, right? Is this a massive dorm or housing unit?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
I don't know if that helps or hurts their cause.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's called Bancroft Hall. It's the only sort of dorm setup that I know of that is like this, where, like, as you said, everybody's in the same place. Hmm. Now, they say that they have on-site medical staff and that anybody who's isolated will be in a separate section of Bancroft Hall away from the rest of the students or the midshipmen. But I don't know. Will that help or hurt remains to be seen. Good questions. Both are a bit different. At the military academy, they have a similar system, although we've gone less in depth on that. But same idea. Face masks are required for everyone. There's a quarantine period at the beginning. Cadets arrive on a staggered schedule. At West Point, they have had confirmed cases already, and those cadets were isolated and theoretically tested negatively twice in a row and then reintegrated back with the rest of the cadets.
Thanks, Mark. Mark Satter, defense reporter at CQ Roll Call. 21 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Hey, glad you're with us. Thanks for spending part of your weekend here. When stock prices fall, many investors, both amateurs and pros, are scared off. After all, it requires a certain temperament, along with years of investment experience, to ignore the crowd and the prophets of doom. Jonathan Clements, founder of HumbleDollar.com, says, if you want to make good money, next time the broad market is worth less, do yourself a favor. Step up to the plate and buy more. Jonathan, your take.
So a lot of ordinary investors are just like me. When the market goes down, their instinct is, I'm going to buy more stocks. And why wouldn't you do that? I mean, prices are lower. So that, you know, doesn't that make stocks more appealing? Just like if you go to the stores and prices are lower, doesn't it make whatever you're going to buy at the store more appealing? But according to the clever types on Wall Street, the Wall Street professionals, this is the way the dumb money behaves. And indeed, when everyday investors buy on the dip, some people on Wall Street consider it to be a contrarian signal, some signal that, you know, foolish investors getting involved in the market, and it just means the market is going to head lower. I think they're totally wrong.
Why do they say that?
Well, mostly I think it's because Wall Street has a vested interest in denigrating everyday investors. I mean, if Wall Street could persuade everyday investors they are unfit to manage their own money, what are investors going to do? They're going to turn over their money to Wall Street money managers, to brokers, to mutual fund managers to oversee their money for them. And as a consequence, the profits on Wall Street are going to be higher and the bonuses at the end of the year are going to be larger. So Wall Street has an incentive to basically say, our customers are really stupid and that's why they need us. And I would say, you know, most investors, if they really put their mind to it, could probably figure this stuff out for themselves.
Man, that's it. Not to go off the beaten path here, but that's something you have maintained for years, correct? That the Wall Street money managers seek to denigrate those who are not them?
And it's sort of like, you know, the good people at Ford and General Motors saying, boy, I can't believe those drivers. They're so terrible. You know, nobody, no other industry I can think of goes around bad-mouthing their customers the way Wall Street does. You know, you don't hear Ford and General Motors saying, wow, they were really stupid to buy that car.
To your point about this more broadly, too, if you're not going to buy on the dip, then when are you going to buy?
Exactly. I mean, if you're not going to buy on the dip, when are you going to buy? Should you buy on market rallies instead? Would that be more intelligent to buy when prices have already gone up? What I would say to investors is this. It's really hard to figure out whether the stock market is over or undervalued. We have all these different metrics out there, price earnings ratios, dividend yields, price to book value, and so on. But the fact is, none of them predict the short-term direction of the market. And in fact, they're not even particularly good at predicting the long-term direction of the market. So the best indication of value that we have is price. If prices are lower, the odds are stocks are better value. And if you're an investor who wants to buy when stocks are better value, you should buy when prices are lower. So yeah, the next time the market drops a couple of percent, you know, if you can scrounge around in the sofa cushions and find a little few coins to invest, throw it in the stock market.
We're speaking with Jonathan Clements. He's the founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. He's written a piece called Take the Low Road, and it's about buying the dip. How do you go against the traditional wisdom of, hey, this is market timing and we're not supposed to do that?
And, you know, market timing is a big no-no, but market timing is really a completely different strategy. It involves, you know, sitting there and saying, I think the stock market is, you know, going to fall or going to rise, and then acting based on that forecast. When you're buying the dip, what you're doing is saying, I don't know what the market is going to do, but I know what it just did. It just fell. Therefore, I think I should put more money into the stock market.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. It is 13 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppes, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
all of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Dell supports America's entrepreneurs during Small Business Month with all you need to office anywhere. Save up to 45% on computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Upgrade to new modern devices with Windows 10. Plus, save on top-brand tech while enjoying free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the tech that's just right. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/smallbusinessdeals.
Thanks for joining us. Suburbanites are risking a water fight in hot pursuit of a backyard accessory they might have balked at a summer ago, and that's an above-ground pool. Cooped up American families with nowhere to go this summer, as many community pools, lakes, and beaches remain closed, have eagerly embraced do-it-yourself projects to make their homes and backyards staycation-worthy. But not everybody loves that creativity. It's a story by Patrick Thomas, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Patrick, what's this about?
People are... There's less entertainment this summer, and people have more free time on their hands and are taking on these home projects of installing their own pool for the time being. Plans to Disney World are canceled. Maybe their community pool, their neighborhood pool is out of commission this summer because of the virus. So they need some, you got to distract the kids some way. People are still working from home. You got to give them something to do. So people are looking to these pools for at least some sort of entertainment to keep the kids or the family occupied during this time.
All right. Seems like a reasonable idea. However, as you point out, they have become a flashpoint among, at a minimum, right, neighbors, town officials, homeowners associations. What's happening on that front?
That's true. Neighbors view them as basically an eyesore. Homeowners associations are not a big fan of the pools. They say they diminish property values, especially if they're not taken down right away. Some homeowners associations have been more lenient, saying, if it's an inflatable pool, take it down, hide it so we don't have to look at it, then that's okay. But for the most part, neighbors just aren't very keen on the idea of having these above ground pools, that they can be loud, they can have loud stereos. Sometimes they have pump systems that, you know, when an in-ground pool, you have your pumps are for the most part buried or they're covered, they're alongside the house. Above ground pools are a little different. They're a little bit more noisy. Neighbors aren't the biggest fan of them. And there was one neighborhood we talked to, their houses are a little bit closer together and they're concerned that an above ground pool will allow you to see in each other's houses. I hadn't heard that before, but I guess there's a privacy concern there.
Wow.
So that was interesting. And, you know, generally on a personal side, I talked to my mother about the story yesterday, and she said she wouldn't want to see an above-ground pool in her neighbor's house. So I guess it's a real concern.
We're speaking with Patrick Thomas, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. He's got a piece entitled, Suburbia is awash in above-ground swimming pools, and that has some neighbors in hot water. Explain, too, because I guess there's a distinction to be made, and that's an inflatable pool versus a traditional above-ground pool, right? The inflatable, you can just let the water out, deflate it, tuck it away in your basement or whatever. Not so much with a standard, I don't know, structured, semi-permanent above-ground pool, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And both of them have their own issues. The more structured above-ground pool may require more permits from your local municipality. There's also the issue of, will this damage the land in a certain way? And that comes with more of the property value concerns in the neighborhood. The inflatable one also has, you know, one of the HOAs says they didn't want kind of a cheap pool in the backyard with all these inflatable toys, and it just kind of creates this mess. Yeah, you can get rid of it, you know, you can take it down, but it still comes with its own set of problems and also still requires a permit.
All right, thanks, Patrick. Patrick Thomas, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for being with us. When Canadian Bert Terhart set sail from British Columbia in late October last year to embark upon a months-long solo journey circumnavigating the globe, he anticipated that his own day-to-day life would dramatically change. What he could not have imagined, however, is how the world he was leaving behind would also become unrecognizable, all thanks to the coronavirus pandemic. Yahoo Life says Mr. Terhart also had no inkling that by traveling on his own and going months without human contact, He'd make headlines as the so-called safest person on the planet. He's now the first North American to complete a nonstop circumnavigation via the five Great Capes without the aid of electronic navigational devices. Wow. Mr. Terhart, married father of four, arrived at Saxe Point Park in Victoria, British Columbia a couple of weeks ago after his 267-day adventure, where he was welcomed by family and friends and promptly asked, "What did I miss?" That'll do it for this hour. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more.